And if you're staying in here, you can go ahead and turn in your Bible to Genesis chapter 46 and 47. We have almost made it. We started at the beginning of the year at Genesis 1 in the beginning, and we have almost made it through chapter 50. We got a couple more weeks after this week. But we've been in the story of Joseph, and last week we saw in the story of Joseph, he finally reveals himself to his brothers. He finally makes himself known to his brothers as they come to Egypt searching for food. And what we talked about last week, though, is really the story was about Judah. Really, the story and the theme and the emphasis in the story is about Judah and his self-sacrifice. Judah is the one who had really messed up. You can go read it. Well, we didn't cover all of the details of that, but he's really messed up in his past. But God has formed him and shaped him, and he has become the leader of his family. And he is proven to be that leader. Why? Because he willingly gave up himself for the sake of his brothers, right? He showed us what the picture of redemption is in the Bible, what God's story is about, redemption, that Judah would willingly give up himself for the sake of his family, right? And this week, God is going to bring Israel's family to Egypt. He's going to graciously provide for them and remain with them as they move to Egypt. And God is at work in their life and to do two things, to help them be fruitful and to multiply. If you remember, it wasn't that long ago we talked about in Genesis 1 and 2 that the command given to every single one of us was what? Be fruitful and multiply, right? And he's doing the same thing in their family. And that's really what I want us to think about today as we move through these two chapters. What is God's call in their life? He wants to see them multiply. He's after creating more and more image bearers of himself. And now in the family of Abraham, now Isaac, now Jacob, who's Israel, and Judah and their whole 70 people, he is after multiplying his image. They thought, right, this has been God's promise that they would do that in the land of Canaan, but now God is moving them to Egypt where they can do this even greater. This is a big step for them, right? This is a big step in Israel's life because, remember, he had left the promised land. He had gone. He'd lived 20 years away, collected a few wives. Well, that's another story for another time, right? And he's come back, and he has been where God told him to be for decades and decades, maybe 70 years or something. And now God's telling him to move, to pick up, and to go somewhere else. And the point of today that God, I think, is trying to teach us is this. If God calls us to it, then he will equip us to do it. God calls Israel to do this, and God promises, I will be with you. Just as he had when he left Canaan previously, just as he had when he came back, God's calling him to something new. And he says, I will be with you. I thought about my own life a little bit. The step to leaving engineering to going into ministry, that was a huge step in my life where I may have spoken a lot of confidence. I may have said a lot of really confident things out loud, but I didn't always know, is this exactly what I'm, okay, is this what God has? What's this all going to be like, right? There's a lot of doubt. There's a lot of questions when we take that big step that we feel like God's called us to do it. And what I've seen, when God calls me to do it, he will equip you to do it. If he calls us to be holy, he will equip us to be holy. If he calls us to multiply, to make disciples, to do all the things that he calls us to do, then he will do that. I felt that in fathering and being a husband. There's many days I know I'm supposed to be a husband to Maddie because I'm married to her, right? I know I'm supposed to be a father to Hudson, Addie, and Ellie. They're not normally in here, so I'm just surprised seeing them. So I know I'm called to that, and there's days that I'm like, am I equipped for this, God? Do I have what it takes to do this? But if God calls us to it, then he will equip us to do that. There's things our church, God's called us to do, and sometimes we take that step, and it's hard. It's a little bit difficult. How do we do this, God? If God calls us to it, then he will give us what we need to do what he calls us to do, and that's one of the things we're going to see today. So look at Genesis 46, starting in verse 1. I just blanked on my kids' names. I just stared at them. Couldn't even think of their names. Okay. Oh, okay. 46, 1 through 7. It says, so Israel took his journey with all that he had, and he came to Beersheba, and he offered sacrifices to the God of his father, Isaac. And God spoke to Israel in visions of the night and said, Jacob, Jacob. And he said, here I am. And he said, I am God, the God of your father. Do not be afraid to go down to Egypt, for there I will make you into a great nation. I myself will go down with you to Egypt, and I will also bring you up again, and Joseph's hand shall close your eyes. And Jacob set out from Beersheba. The sons of Israel carried Jacob, their father, and their little ones and their wives in the wagons that Pharaoh had sent to carry him. They also took their livestock and their goods, which they had gained in the land of Canaan, and came into Egypt, Jacob and all his offspring with him, his sons' sons with him, his daughters and his sons' daughters, all his offspring he brought with him into Egypt. Now, I don't know what the day was like that the sons came back to the father and said, Joseph is alive. I think we get a sense from the story. They don't still tell him the whole truth. They just give out the word, we have found Joseph and he is alive. He is second in command in Egypt. I think they let their father, just imagine, maybe he got attacked by that wild animal, but he escaped and now he's in Egypt, right? They still haven't come clean. But it seems clear that when he comes home and they tell him Joseph is alive, he is in charge, he has all the provisions we need to go to Egypt. It seems that Israel has some reservations. He wants to see Joseph, don't get me wrong, but he has some reservations, right? He's an old man and God's promised him, this is gonna be your land. This is what I'm giving you. So not only that, in chapter 26, God had prohibited Isaac from going to Egypt during a time of famine. Abraham had gone to Egypt, and remember, he'd given away his wife twice to Pharaoh, right? So Egypt, in their family's mind, carries some baggage. Egypt is not a place of promise and hope and goodness. It's a place that I think Israel felt reluctant to go to. He felt torn between, okay, God, you called me here, but now you're telling me to go there. And so what does God do? Just as he's done in his life many times, he shows up and he speaks to him in a dream. And he tells him, Jacob, Jacob, I am your God. Do not be afraid to go. I myself will go with you. Right? We've seen this over and over through Jacob, Israel's life, that God's promise over his whole life is, I will be with you. This is what I'm going to do through you, and this is what I'm going to be. I'm going to be with you. This is what he had promised him in his first dream when he left the promised land and went to Paddan Aram, right? God was with him there. God was with him when he came back, and now God has been with him in his sojourning to Egypt. He says, don't be afraid. I'm going to go with you. Don't be afraid. This is what I have for you. And he says, there in Egypt, I will make you into a great nation. In the places where they were, in the dry, arid climate of Canaan, they probably were not going to multiply greatly. They probably weren't going to become this great nation. But if they could move to this fertile land of Goshen in Egypt, that there was room, there was freedom there, that they weren't going to be attacked, right? There was peace. And God has a plan to move them from this place to there in order to grow them, to multiply them. And he promises him, he says, I will bring you up again. You will not be there forever. I think this is a specific promise to him that you're not going to be buried in Egypt, right? I've got a plan for you here in this promised land. Your eternity is secure with me. But this is also a promise that God's not going to leave them there in Egypt for forever. It's going to take 430 years. It's going to be 430 years from this time to when they come out of the land of Egypt in the book of Exodus. But God's not going to leave them there forever. His hand is still on them. Though he may be slow in our minds, though he may not be quick to do all that we think he should do or how quick he should do it, God is faithful. Now, Israel has a choice here when he hears this dream. When he speaks to God, he has a choice. Do I believe God at his word? Or do I just go with my feelings? Do I trust him and be obedient, or do I stay back? And I think Israel has finally learned in his 100 and plus years on this earth, he's finally learned when God speaks, I should be obedient. God knows what is best, right? So he loads up all of his family, all their stuff, and he takes it all to Egypt. Look at verse 8. It says, now these are the names of the descendants of Israel who came into Egypt. Jacob and his sons, Reuben, Jacob's firstborn, And I'm going to spare you a lot of verses here because I don't know if I can pronounce some of these. He goes through and he lists every member of the family that God has blessed him with. And then he summarizes it. Look at verse 26. It says, all the persons belonging to Jacob who came into Egypt, who were his own descendants, not including Jacob's sons' wives, who were 66 persons in all. And the sons of Joseph who were born to him in Egypt were 2. And all the persons of the house of Jacob who came into Egypt were 70. My Mimi, my dad's mom, loved family history. Anybody have a grandmother that loved family history? Maybe you are the grandmother who loves family history. Anybody in the room? Nobody's confessing this morning. My Mimi would love to sit us down and show us books and tell me about Uncle so-and-so and great aunt so-and-so. And she would tell these stories. It's kind of like reading these verses this morning, right? Israel is so proud of every single one of these 70 members of his family. And to us, they don't really mean a whole lot because we don't know who most of them are, right? But to Israel, every single one of these names meant something. Why? Because it was evidence in his life that God had been faithful to him. God has provided. He left the land of Canaan the first time. He was the only one. He had no wife, no kids, no future, no anything. And he comes now to this point leaving, and he's got a legacy of 70 people. I mean, somebody was telling me this morning their Thanksgiving was like 65 people, and they were so proud of it, right? It's just so many people in our family. This is awesome. That's how he feels right here. This is evidence that God is multiplying Jacob's family. He started this process of multiplying his family. And so they come in to into Egypt with 70 people. Look at verse 28. It said, he had sent Judah ahead of him to Joseph to show the way before him in Goshen. And they came into the land of Goshen. And then Joseph prepared his chariot and went up to meet Israel in Goshen. He presented himself to him and fell on his neck and wept on his neck a good while. And Israel said to Joseph, now let me die, since I have seen your face and know that you are still alive. Joseph said to his brothers and to his father's household, I will go up and tell Pharaoh and will say to him, my brothers, my father's household, who were in the land of Canaan, have come to me. And the men are shepherds, for they have been keepers of livestock, and they have brought their flocks and their herds and all that they have. And when Pharaoh calls you and says, what is your occupation? You shall say, your servants have been keepers of livestock from our youth, even until now, both we and our fathers, in order that you may dwell in the land of Goshen, for every shepherd is an abomination to the Egyptians. So Judah goes ahead. Again, we kind of see his role as leader of the family, and he's preparing it for everyone else's arrival. And when he gets word, when Joseph gets word that the family has arrived in Goshen, later called Ramses or something, he comes in this chariot, right? He's the second in command of all of Egypt. And he comes in a chariot to meet his father, who he has not seen for 20 plus years. I don't know if you've ever had that experience, somebody you haven't seen in 20 plus years that you deeply love. But the tears, the joy, the sadness, the exhilaration of this moment must have just been thrilling, right? For the father to see his son who was dead, who is now alive, to finally hold him and love him and embrace him again. Israel's son, he believed he'd been dead for 20 years, and he finally sees him again. He says, I can die now. I can die in peace. Like, my life is complete because I know that my son is alive. He's going to live 17 more years, the same amount of time that he had with Joseph as a boy. He's going to get 17 more years. But this day, this moment would have been just an incredible moment. Now, Joseph has decided this. He's decided that the best place for them in the land of Egypt, on this whole area known we call Egypt, would have been Goshen. It had been closest to the promised land. It was away from kind of the city and the stuff of the culture of Egypt to kind of keep them separate, to keep them distant. But it was rich. It was fertile, full of all kinds of stuff that they would have needed. Now, he still has to get Pharaoh's approval, and so he uses his wisdom in this story, and so he kind of coaches the brothers. Hey, here's what we're going to say to Pharaoh. We got to go get his approval, but we're going to do this, and here's what you're going to say. You're going to tell him that we're shepherds, and they were. He's not lying. He's not manipulating the facts. This is really true. So he coaches them, hey, tell him that we're shepherds, right? And there's a couple of reasons for this. One, the Egyptians did not think highly of shepherds, apparently. That's what it says. They're an abomination, right? This was a despised profession. Think of it, if you've ever seen The Hunger Games, anybody ever seen The Hunger Games, right? The capital, right? This is Egypt, right? And they're real, lots of culture, lots of elite status and all sorts of things like that. And the ones in Goshen keeping the sheep, that's like District 9, right? It's way out in the boonies, right? These are no important people, right? It's too dirty. It's too humble. It's no glory, no culture. And it also would have been, the second reason would have been, Pharaoh needed to know these people are not coming in to take over. They're not warriors. They're not mercenaries. No, they're just shepherds. And so they come before Pharaoh. And this is a scary moment for them, right? This is a moment where Pharaoh can go, no, you don't get to come live here. No, you're going back to there. This is my land. You can't have this. But we see how God is providing for them. Look at verse chapter 47, 1 through 6. It says, Joseph went in and told Pharaoh, my father and my brothers with their flocks and herds and all that they possess have come from the land of Canaan. And they're now in the land of Goshen. And from among his brothers, he took five men and presented them to Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said to his brothers, what is your occupation? And they said to Pharaoh, your servants are shepherds, as our fathers were. And they said to Pharaoh, we have come to sojourn in the land, for there is no pasture for your servants' flocks, for the famine is severe in the land of Canaan. And now, please, let your servants dwell in the land of Goshen. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, your father and your brothers have come to you. The land of Egypt is before you. Settle your father and your brothers in the best of the land. Let them settle in the land of Goshen. And if you know any able men among them, put them in charge of my livestock. See, the brothers come before Pharaoh, and they do just as Joseph has coached them to do. Hey, we're shepherds. We're sojourners. We don't have a home. We can't stay where we were. We need a place to graze our animals. They tell him of how bad it is in Canaan. They tell him that they're just Joseph's family. We just need a place to graze our animals. And God is at work in this moment. God's name is not listed here. It doesn't say God wooed Pharaoh's heart to grant them favor, but God clearly does that. Pharaoh has no reason to give them this, but God works to give them favor with Pharaoh. As the Proverbs say, he holds the hearts of kings in his hands, and he directs them as he wishes. And Pharaoh is compassionate and gracious towards them. And he tells Joseph, hey, tell him to take the best. Don't just pick a little plot over here. All of Egypt is before you. Take the best. Settle where you want. Live there. Hey, and if there's any capable men, let them take care of my flocks. Let them do what they do, but do it with my stuff. This would have earned them money. This would have even more than provided for their needs. This is incredible that God has graciously opened up Egypt to them to provide for all their needs, to equip them to do what he has called them to do, which is to be fruitful and multiply. Look at verse 7. This is Joseph brought in Jacob, his father, and stood him before Pharaoh. And Jacob blessed Pharaoh, and Pharaoh said to Jacob, how many are the days of the years of your life, i.e., how old are you? And Jacob said to Pharaoh, the days of the years of my sojourning are 130 years. Few and evil have been the days of the years of my life, and they have not attained to the days of the years of the life of my fathers in the days of their sojourning. And Jacob blessed Pharaoh and went out from the presence of Pharaoh. And then Joseph settled his father and his brothers and gave them a possession in the land of Egypt, in the best of the land, in the land of Ramesses, as Pharaoh had commanded. And Joseph provided his father, his brothers, and all his father's household with food according to the number of their dependents. Joseph not only brings his brothers before Pharaoh, but he brings his dad, the one who I'm sure he's told Pharaoh about. He's an old man. He's 130 years at this point. I don't know if they had to carry him or what. But instead of Pharaoh, the powerful, the strong, the rich one, instead of him blessing Israel, instead of him blessing Jacob, there's this reversal in this story, right? It's Jacob that's blessing Pharaoh. Right? Why is this? Why is Israel or Jacob blessing Pharaoh? What is that about, right? That's weird. This is backwards from how it should be. Pharaoh should be the one blessing him. But this has been God's promise, right? That I'm going to bless you, what? To be a blessing to all the nations. This is a picture of God fulfilling his promise to Abraham. Everything that he said would happen is happening. Everything that he promised them, he is coming through. And Israel blesses Pharaoh. Now, Pharaoh asked him a question. I don't know that we're really allowed in our culture to ask this question of somebody, right? It's kind of rude, right? It's like asking if somebody's pregnant. You just don't do it, guys, okay? Pharaoh asked Israel, how many are the days of the years of your life? How old are you? And I think it's just a question of honor. He's just honoring the man for his years. And Israel misses an incredible opportunity here. Instead of being honoring of God about the many years that God has blessed him with and how God has been with him and how God has taken care of him and all the things that he has seen his God do, what does Israel do? He complains. He says, well, the years are evil and they're too short. I'm not as old as my dad was. I'm not as old as my grandfather was. And all the days of my life have been evil. He has this moment where he can stand before a king and God brings him before a king and he could have honored God and all that he had done in his life, how he'd been faithful to him. But what does he? He says, I'm just a sojourner and the years are evil. And he has such a negative perspective here. He misses an opportunity to glorify God. And even through Israel's shortcoming, God chooses to bless him. Pharaoh doesn't just provide, hey, y'all go stay in this little area, but don't come too close. He says, here's your possession. No longer are you a sojourner, a wanderer. No, you have a possession. I want you to briefly see in 47 what God does in these next 5 years. I'm not going to read all the verses, but what happens is the famine still has 5 years to go. They're in a good place. They're able to graze their herds and all of that. But the people still don't have grain. And so Joseph begins to sell them grain. And the first year, he takes all their money. And they come the second year, and they go, hey, we need grain. And he goes, all right, give me some money. And they go, we don't have any because we gave it all to you, right? And so he says, okay, this year we'll take all the livestock. So give me your livestock, and I'll give you grain. And so Joseph, for Pharaoh, collects all the livestock. The next year, same thing happens. Hey, give me some money. We don't have any money. Okay, give me some livestock. We don't have any livestock. Okay, give me your land, right? And Joseph collects all their land. And he tells them, hey, we'll give you seed and you harvest it and you give 20% back to Pharaoh, right? This sounds like a bad deal, right? This doesn't sound like a good deal to them, but look how they take it. Look at verse 23. It says, Joseph said to the people, behold, I have this day bought you and your land for Pharaoh. Now here is seed for you, and you shall sow the land. And at the harvest, you shall give a fifth to Pharaoh, and 4/5 shall be your own, as seed for the field, and as food for yourselves and your households, and as food for your little ones. And they said, you have saved our lives. May it please my Lord, we will be servants to Pharaoh. And so Joseph made a statute concerning the land of Egypt, and it stands to this day that Pharaoh should have the fifth. And the land of the priest alone did not become Pharaoh's. I think we read this and we think, well, Joseph really ripped him off. he had this foresight, he saved up all this grain, and then he took all their money, all their animals, now he took their land, and they're just sharecroppers, right? He has enslaved all the people of Egypt to Pharaoh. This seems like a bad deal. But in their eyes, what do they say? You have saved our lives. We will be servants to Pharaoh, Right? They view this, if it weren't for Joseph, if it wasn't for God in this situation, then we would be dead. It's better that we're alive, and yeah, we owe something to Pharaoh, but it's better that we are alive. And the point that is being made is this: God continues to be faithful to his word. Joseph is ruling over Egypt. He's ruling over his family. He's ruling over everything. And God is the one who set this in motion. Look at verse 27, last one. It says, "Thus Israel settled in the land of Egypt, in the land of Goshen, and they gained possessions in it, and were fruitful and multiplied greatly. And Jacob lived in the land of Egypt 17 years. So the days of Jacob, the years of his life, were 147 years. And when the time drew near that Israel must die, he called his son Joseph and said to him, 'If now I have found favor in your sight, put your hand under my thigh and promise to deal kindly and truly with me. Do not bury me in Egypt, but let me lie with my fathers. Carry me out of Egypt and bury me in their burying place.' And he answered, 'Joseph, I will do as you have said.' And he said, 'Swear to me.' And he swore to him. Then Israel bowed himself upon the head of his bed." You see, the key verse in this, and we won't really talk about Israel's death, is that God put them in Goshen, and what happened? They were fruitful and multiplied greatly. God has done everything that he said he was going to do. God has fulfilled every promise that he has made, and he is equipping them to do what he has called them to do. See, this was God's command from Genesis chapter 1 to all of humanity: be fruitful, multiply, fill the earth with the image of God. God tells Abraham, "I'm going to bless you to be a blessing, and your descendants will be so great that they're more than the stars in the sky, more than the grains of sand on the earth." See, God has called them to be fruitful and to multiply, and he is equipping them, empowering them to accomplish it. See, whatever God calls us to, He graciously gives us what we need to accomplish that. We too are called to be fruitful and to multiply. Right? Every single one of us. That doesn't just mean, hey, go have some babies. That's part of it. Certainly means having children to the glory of God. But more than that, for the church, it means that we are called to multiply disciples. We are called to multiply the image of Christ. We're called to do that in our own families. We're called to do that in our community, in our state. We're called to do that in Africa and all kinds of places, to the ends of the earth, among all nations. We're called to multiply. We're called to make more and more disciples. We're called to see other churches become healthy and be planted. We're called to reproduce the image of God in all ways. See, God has given us his word and his spirit to help us do that. We don't have what it takes to do all of that. We step into that. That's a huge step for us. God, how do I make disciples? How do I help somebody else follow you? How do I do all of this? And that feels maybe like a big step for some of you. But the truth is, God has given us everything that we need to do what he has called us to do, to be fruitful and multiply. The last point, and then we'll finish today. I hope that you have seen this throughout as we have studied this story for so long. Number one, God is faithful to fulfill his promises. What God's word says, God will do. If God says it, he will do. In parenting, so many times we say things to our kids, hey, if you do that again, you're going to get in trouble. And then they do it again, and maybe we're 50-50 with follow through, right? We don't always fulfill our promises. God is completely faithful. And Israel's going to be not in the promised land for 430 years. But God is preparing them to go back, to be a nation, to be in the promised land. God is giving them wealth. He's giving them prosperity. He's multiplying them. God's going to use all kinds of circumstances that they don't understand. And in a moment, it feels as if God maybe has abandoned them. But we need to hear this reminder, and we need to believe this truth today. God has not taken his hand off of us. No matter what we have going on in our life, no matter what goes on, God is faithful to fulfill his promises. That's who he is. And so we are called not to be in control, but to give up control, to cast all of our worries and our cares on him, because he, the one who rules over all things, cares for us. Even when things change, even when things don't meet our expectation, even when tragedy hits, even when things don't work like we think they ought to, God is still faithful. What we're going to see in the next 2 weeks is this theme that God works all things together for good. That's what Joseph's going to come to the conclusion of at the end of his life, that God works all things together for good. He takes what is meant for evil and he uses it for good. He takes what we messed up and he turns it into something beautiful for his glory. And he does the same thing in our lives. He does the same thing in our lives, right? Let's pray this morning. God, we thank you for your word, and I thank you for just the example of you fulfilling your word, even down to the smallest of things. God, you don't make a promise that you don't intend to keep, and you're faithful and true to your word. And so, God, we thank you that you are a faithful God when we are faithless. We thank you that you are a promise-keeping God when we even fail at that. God, I thank you that you are in control and that you are working all things together for good. God, we thank you that even the things that we've messed up, God, you have taken and turned into something that we could not even have imagined. God, we thank you that you are working all things together for our good and for your glory. God, I pray that you would help us to be fruitful and to multiply here as Huntington First Baptist Church. God, you have called us to reproduce and replicate and multiply the amount of disciples. God, I pray that we would be focused on that as a church, God. That we would see more and more people becoming disciples and then becoming mature disciples. God, I pray that you would give us energy for the task. God, we thank you that you've given us your spirit and your word to empower us to do what you have called us to do. That you've equipped us to do what you've called us to do. God, we thank you for that. God, I pray if there's anybody here today that doesn't know you, God, that you would work in their heart to bring them to faith. God, if they have questions about that, God, I pray that they would ask somebody that they know around them that's a Christian, or come talk to me or somebody else. God, I pray that they would seek after the answers that you have put in their heart. God, we thank you for the chance to be together today, to be reminded of your faithfulness and your love for us. We pray all this in your Son's name. Amen.